everybody. It's Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, a guest or two to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we're going to be talking about domestic violence. Domestic violence, I mean the incidence of domestic violence is estimated at 4 million cases annually, or one assault every 15 seconds. Over 50% of all women murdered are killed by male partners, and 12% of murdered men are killed by female partners. Domestic violence can happen to anyone at any time and does not respect age, gender, or sexual preference. It also does not occur in a void. In fact, there are common characteristics and warning signs that may be preludes to violence. Recognizing these warning signs is the best protection from abuse, according to Noel Nelson, PhD, Dr. Noel Nelson, who is the author of Dangerous Relationships, How to Identify and Respond to the 7 Warning Signs of a Troubled Relationship, an excellent book with wonderful research in it. Noel, welcome to WBAI.
Armand. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, Noel, here's the real question for you. I know that there's domestic violence. It scans a number of behaviors of different people, but I want to talk about the physical violence specifically, and then we'll back into everything else. By the time someone gets to physical violence, there have been many signs that have been ignored.
Absolutely.
Let's hear about them. What are the 7 signs?
Well, the very first one is what I have called the whirlwind romance. Which can sound very strange because who doesn't want, you know, romance? But what will happen in a relationship which has the potential for domestic violence is you'll be going along having a wonderful time with your new love, and at some point you will say something along the lines of, you know, I'd like to take a break. I just want to go see my mom or wash my hair or, you know, do nothing tonight on my own. And your new love will say, oh, but I want to be with you. We have so much fun together, blah, blah, blah. And will push and push and push until you say, okay. And you don't realize that it's that pushing and you're submitting to your new love's push that is a sign of potential abuse. Because abusers, above all, are controlling people. And they, from the very beginning, test you, if you will, to see if you can be controlled.
Abusers are all controlling people?
Yes, abusers are highly controlling people. That's why they abuse.
Well, but I can think of an incidence where a person like a histrionic personality or a borderline personality is not necessarily controlling, but suddenly they burst out and they can't take it and their rage turns into violence.
Well, you're not really, Armand, you're not really talking then about the specifics of domestic pattern in relationships. People who have disorders such as histrionic or borderline personality disorders really fit a whole different category. I mean, we are looking in this book at regular normal people, if you will, not people with a severe diagnosis, because their behavior is quite different.
Okay, so what we're talking about then in describing domestic violence, we're not talking about an incidence of being hit.
Absolutely
we're talking
not.
About repeated, a pattern of abuse.
Okay. Which may or may not include being hit. Most often, unfortunately, it does. Domestic violence tends to escalate to death.
So, but you can't, if it escalates to death, it can't happen more than once.
Well, it can happen many times. It escalates to death, meaning that if you ignore domestic violence and you don't pay attention to it, and you go into the phase where there are beatings, the beatings will not stop until one or the other of the partner dies.
So phase one, if you find a whirlwind romance, where somebody is so hot for you, they're going crazy and they just love you and they want to be with you every second and you love it because nobody's paid attention to you for a week.
Well, for a week, sometimes for years.
For years, and there you have this passionate, incredible guy or woman who is just wants to give you their all and says, here, take everything I got to give you. I want everything you've got to offer.
Yes.
Somewhere in the back of your mind, you must say to yourself, you should be saying to yourself, this is fun, but I got to keep my eyes open.
Exactly. And you know, you summarized it beautifully, Armand. That's the whole thing. This could be the most wonderful relationship of your entire existence, but you want to keep your eyes open because if there is that push factor, that sort of, it, and it feels like, it really feels like a tractor's coming at you, then you may be in trouble. And the easiest way to find out is just to take a little time and a little distance.
Which kills the fun.
No, not really.
Because people who want to get lost in relationships.
Ah, but that's a different matter.
See, but that's what most people do when they get in whirlwind relationships. They're losing themselves.
And unfortunately, when you lose yourself to that degree, you literally do lose yourself.
Yes, I mean, you may lose yourself, not always. Yeah. You may. It just may be your exercise for the moment. If it's happening for the evening, it may be okay. But,
oh, heavens, yes. If it's happening for the evening, it's fine.
You know, but the truth of it is, if you pick up somebody in a bar or at a juice bar somewhere or on the beach, and you go home with them and you have this incredibly intense, very intense, passionate relationship, and you know somebody is capable of walking the edges of their passions, they may be harmful people.
Yes, they may indeed.
And it's just something you record.
It's something you pay attention to, as you said earlier, yes.
You say, maybe I won't ask him to spend the night. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know him yet.
That's correct.
That kind of thing.
That's correct.
Let's keep going with these signs. That's very interesting. What is the second sign?
Well, the second sign, would be possessiveness, which sort of is in lockstep with a whirlwind romance. In other words, what will happen is the person that will start behaving as if they own you, which means the way it plays out in behavior is they'll be checking up on you. They'll want to know where you're going, how long you're going for, who are you seeing, what did you talk to them about, why couldn't they come, they want to come, etc. In other words, they start to invade, if you will, every aspect of your life.
And they start, maybe they'll even buy you a beeper. That's the
newest thing
nowadays is here, you wear this beeper, and it's like this long umbilical cord, you know? So therefore, I've got you at every moment. Anytime I want, I just beep you, and you've got to respond, or carry your cell phone and keep it turned on.
And beyond that kind of umbilical cord bonding, if you will, there is also, they start to make decisions for you about what you should and shouldn't do, and etc. And they always do, at this stage of the game, Armand, and this is what is so devastating, it's all done very charmingly and very, very romantically. You'll say, you know, I want to go visit with my friend Martha, and their response will be, oh, you don't want to see Martha. She's really not up to your class. I mean, she's not stylish enough for you. Why do you want to go see Martha? And you'll find yourself saying, oh, well, I guess I don't want to see Martha.
Well, you know, that brings up a good point, because the way you're talking about it and the way you're saying it is, you're saying all the things that a man would do in seducing a woman. Right. But, you know, I want to take it from the other side as well. Women are domestically violent as well.
Unfortunately, yes.
And
men don't complain about it enough.
And men practically can't complain about it. You know what I mean? In this society, a man walking into a police station saying, my wife beat me up, would be laughed at.
Well, not so much nowadays, but you're right, Armand. In general, it's not a good position.
But let's think about women who do this. So let's go to the whirlwind romance. The woman who does what? She picks you up and she wants to be in your life and she wants to... How does that work?
Well, do you remember that really marvelous film with Glenn Close and Mike Douglas?
Dangerous Liaisons, or
no, it wasn't Dangerous Liaisons, but it was this marvelous film where literally that's what happened. Mike Douglas, you know, a woman is very attracted to him at a function, and she seduces him, and he thinks it's a one night thing, very passionate, and then the next thing he knows, she's calling his wife, invading his life, you know, being extremely demanding, and that's how women do it, and women do it absolutely, and that is abuse.
You mean that's abuse itself?
Well, in the sense that what will happen is that the woman will absolutely hit the guy, call him all sorts of names, interfere with his work, do all sorts of things. Yes, of course that's abuse.
I understand. Okay, so one of the signs, you know, you said something about it in your book about a disrespectful kiss. What is a disrespectful kiss?
A disrespectful kiss?
Yes.
Is a kiss that you do not invite or wish. And men or women, but in particular men will be more likely to do this, is that, for example, you extend your hand in greeting, and a guy will take your hand and kiss it, palm up. That's a very intimate kiss.
That's an intimate kiss. And
it
says,
not something you do to a stranger.
Okay, and it says to you, a guy who crosses boundaries.
That's correct.
Okay, now this becomes an important key, because, you know, even though I think you think that borderlines and histrionics are too severe a pathology to fall what's into the normal crowd, I think there's a lot more that many more of the population do fall in these categories than we know of. Normal people usually don't wind up with domestic violence.
That is incorrect.
Tell me why that's incorrect.
Because domestic violence, unfortunately, has absolutely nothing to do. It has been shown to cross every single boundary. Race, color, creed, religion, any economic or social category. Domestic violence, unfortunately, is present in every single possible area of society. It has nothing to do with whether people are borderline narcissistic, histrionic, or anything else. It has a lot to do with, unfortunately, from a male perspective, how women have long been viewed as chattel or cattle, and that has evolved into a thinking that, you know, I beat my wife once a week whether she needs it or not. And although nowadays we're far too evolved to say things like that, it is sort of still in the culture that is okay. So it is not just, it is far from an individual phenomenon. It is also very much a social phenomenon.
Yeah, but Noel, are you trying to say to me that if somebody who beats his wife on a regular level, or a woman who beats her husband on a regular level, or a woman who beats her own wife, you know, let's talk about homosexual relationships,
yeah,
as well.
Which unfortunately happens just as much there too.
I'm sure, but if you have somebody who beats somebody on a regular basis, you're saying to me, "Oh yeah, but those are normal folks," and I'm saying, "Wait a minute, that's a picture of pathology. Why would you be hitting somebody like that? Why would you be beating them like that? I mean, you're saying to me, no, these are normal folks."
But you see, I'm contrasting what you call. In other words, they are not necessarily going to be diagnosed as borderline or histrionic.
No,
they are
but,
not necessarily going to be diagnosed as anything of the sort.
But what would they be diagnosed as? They would have a diagnosis when they
would have no, not necessarily. They would be acting out in ways that are inappropriate.
Okay, so we'd have an acting out personality. We'd have something, you know. We would have a DSM something for them. They would not.
You can search for that, Armand, but I really don't see the usefulness of it.
Well, I do, because I think I'm saying to folks, and I want to understand why you think it's important to go the other way. You want to say this is normal people, and I want to say, yeah, but if a guy's hitting his wife and not, or hitting his children and not really caring about what he's doing, there may be a
high... He cares enormously about what he's doing.
He may or may not care.
In other words, it is not... Most of the time what you have is you have a cycle. If you want to talk... Now, this is not something I address in the book because my specialty is prevention, not the actual physical violence. But if you want to look at the cycles of physical violence... The way it goes is a certain amount of pressure builds up in the batterer over time, over things that are happening with him or herself, quite apart from the relationship. And then at a certain point in time, the batterer will explode, and they do that exploding within their relationship, even though the stressors may not be coming from there at all. Immediately after the explosion, there is what is called the honeymoon phase, where they are enormously contrite and very upset and very... you know, upset at the hurt that they have caused.
Apologetic.
And then there will be a lull, a period where everything is rosy and everything is peaceful until the stress builds up again. So it's not accurate to say that that batterers don't care. There are sociopathic individuals, absolutely. They have shown no remorse and no conscience. But those are a relatively small percent of people who are engaged in domestic violence.
Boy, we have an interesting thought here, but let me continue. You know, before I go further with this, I want you to continue with the signs that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, is a sign the guy is an alcoholic? Is that a sign? Is that not one of the signs right off the bat?
No. Alcoholism may or may not play a part. Certainly, when it comes to actual physical abuse, alcohol is considered a disinhibitor, meaning that people who drink are more likely to then lose their inhibitions and hit someone. But alcoholics as a group range from very passive people who would never hurt a flea to people who go into explosive rages, which are just awful.
What percentage of people who were battered with who go into a place, you know, complaining of being battered is a result of, would be accompanied with alcohol or with other drugs? Wouldn't there be a high percentage?
No. It would be a percentage, but it wouldn't be a... I mean, it depends what you consider high, Armand. I don't know
high,
the exact
figure. I'd say anything over 5% is high.
Well, certainly it would be over 5%, but that's because over 5% of the population drinks even on a social level. So alcohol is a disinhibitor, but you cannot say that people who drink are or are not going to become domestic abusers. The most telling sign of who is going to become an abuser is this a controlling individual or not? And we don't have a DSM for controlling.
Okay, so if a person is a controlling individual,
that's your primary sign, and it shows up from the minute the romance starts. Because a controlling individual will say, no, I don't want you to go see Martha. No, I don't want you to do your hair tonight. I want you to be with me. Only they'll say it very charmingly.
Well, what about charm? How about charm as being one of the signs?
Charm is certainly a sign. Absolutely. However, please bear in mind that charm can also be completely unrelated.
All right.
Batterers do not start off. There is no way that a batterer says to a new love, oh, by the way, I need you to know I'm going to beat you up within the next 6 months.
Well, they may say it with certain lovers.
I beg your pardon?
They may say it with certain lovers. There are certain people who have a penchant.
Well, that's sadomasochism.
For acting out sadomasochism.
That is a mutually agreed upon. That is sadomasochism. That is not what is usually considered domestic violence.
Well, yeah, but you know, now you could take that when you start off with a sadomasochistic relationship that's agreed upon.
Yes.
And then the guy gets angry or the woman gets angry and they've been in the dominant position and they go overboard and they go over the limitations. Right? You think that's a natural flow?
I have no idea. I have no experience or research in that area.
Okay, let's just go back to we have the third step, the third warning sign.
The third warning sign is what I have called the switch, where your up to now charming, delightful man or woman suddenly becomes either cold as ice and withdraws, and that puts you in terrible pain, or has a violent temper all of a sudden that appears out of nowhere. In other words, there is a dramatic switch from previous behavior. And that is the if you will, the trouble sign that most people really can see and totally ignore. In other words, they attribute it to a mood or a one-time thing, and they don't stop and realize what's just happened.
And so the sign of that, I imagine, must be raising your voices.
It's either a icy withdrawal or an outright screaming. I mean, it's dramatic. Either way.
Like you wonder, who is this person?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's a real Dr. Jekyll, Mr. or Ms. Hyde. And unfortunately, people will happen in their relationship, and the victim, if you will turn around and go, it can't be them. I mean, it must be something awful happened at work, or it must be something they don't integrate it into their view of the overall person, and that's where they get themselves in trouble.
During this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde self, a person becomes real sensitive to a lot of different things. They start reading signs. If they're in the controlling place, you know, they start getting real sensitive to personal rejection. Is that not true?
Well, yes, and people who abuse are always highly sensitized to personal rejection right from the get-go.
Isn't that a funny thing? You would imagine if they're dominant. But I guess if you're a dominant person or you're a controlling person, one of the reasons you're controlling in the first place is to try to control people from leaving you or rejecting you.
Exactly. Your greatest fear is fear of abandonment.
And so now, if your greatest fear is a fear of abandonment, then you have this person who comes along and says that they are, you know, they threaten you with some form of rejection, or they even suggest, I'm going to be going to school, I want to take a course.
Right.
Right. Then what happens? It gets internalized? What happens?
Well, at that point, the abuser panics, if you will, internally. And since they can't show that vulnerability or cope with it, really, is they'll try to, in one way or another, control their loved one.
And so they'll try to inhibit them. But this sensitivity to rejection in all forms.
Yes.
Okay, so we're learning. We're learning about the kind of things we would watch for.
Oh, yes.
Okay. What are the kind of things happen? How the unpredictable emotional reactions?
Yes, in other words, one day you can make the bed a certain way and it's just fine, and the next day you make the bed in that exact same way and it's not fine. And it's not just like it's not fine, oh honey, would you please make the bed differently? It's screaming and yelling, or it's icy withdrawal. I mean, it's one or the other. So it's unpredictable because you start walking on eggshells. You never know what's going to trip it, if you will. What's going to how the bomb is going to explode.
But then this person, you know, a person who's in a relationship, and many people who are listening, by the way, are going to be listening to this and say, well, I'm sensitive to rejection, or my husband's sensitive to rejection. He likes to control me. Yes, he raises his voice. Sometimes he's a Jekyll and Hyde. Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying all of that, and they're saying, and that, yes, he does have these moments, and we've been together 47 years, mm-hmm. and he's never acted out.
Fine. Then he's never taken it any further. Fine.
And that's the, but you don't, you drop your cautions then? You say, well, then those signs don't
matter?
No,
hopefully you've learned, if you have been in that kind of a relationship for 47 years, then you've learned to set some kind of borders or boundaries so that it doesn't go further.
One of the signs of the kind of person who may be, become violent is they will not accept borders or boundaries.
Absolutely not.
So there's a good sign in itself, you know, the refusal to accept any limitations.
Mm-hmm. Or any constrictions, any kind of, yes, mm-hmm, on behavior.
All right, and we'll continue with that. Now, what is the next sign that of domestic relationship?
Well, the next one potential is domestic. Blame. In other words, whatever it is, it's your fault. And what's fascinating to me about this one, Armand, is it doesn't necessarily have to do with the relationship. If the weather's bad, it's your fault. If the traffic was bad, it's your fault. If he didn't get a raise or she didn't get a raise, it's your fault. If he has a headache or she has a headache, it's your fault. It doesn't matter what it is, it's your fault. The abusers are incapable of taking personal responsibility for just about anything.
And so what happens is they disown their responsibility and they blame, and you're there.
That's right.
And so if they're frustrated with themselves, if they lose a gambling bet, or if they have trouble at their job, they come home and you're it.
You're it. It's your fault. And they are absolutely masterful in how they will rationalize that it's your fault. You see, the traffic is your fault because if you had made the breakfast that they really like, they would have been able to leave 5 minutes earlier, and then they wouldn't have gotten in this horrible snarl of traffic, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's always your fault, and the way they can make it your fault is fascinating.
If anybody did all of this stuff to anybody else, you know, it would be, you may as well leave anyway, even if they don't get violent.
Well, that's hopefully the idea.
What's
in other
the
words,
idea?
If you let it get up to here, you're already in trouble. It's a bad relationship anyway, because it's so demeaning to you, and it's so cutting and hurtful to you, that you don't want to be there. It's not good for you. But people stay because one of the things that persons who are not in an abusive relationship don't realize is very frequently these relationships are extremely intense. That's both on the good side and on the dysfunctional side. The sex can be extremely intense. The degree of bonding is extremely intense. It's that I want you, I need you, I absolutely must have you, is, as you said earlier, Armand, a real powerful thing for people. To get that much attention and be that needed and that wanted, for a lot of people, they will take the beatings in between.
Hmm. Next step.
Well, the next step after blame, which, by the way, I think is a real biggie, is verbal abuse. And, you know, it was hard for me to put these steps in absolute sequential order because verbal abuse can happen pretty much any time. Blame can happen pretty much any time. But the reason for the order is that, you know, verbal abuse is for sure happening by now. And verbal abuse is not saying to someone, you're late, you know, I'm angry, you're late, and yelling at them. Verbal abuse is saying, you're late, you dumb, excuse, pathetic excuse for a human being. In other words, it's cutting stuff.
Yeah, it's stuff that really is meant to dismantle your mind. It's meant to hurt you.
It's meant to hurt you very much. It's taking things that you've said in great confidence in moments of really profound intimacy, you know, stuff you've revealed about yourself that you've never revealed to anyone else, and then throwing it back at you in very vile ways. That's verbal abuse.
All right, and so, like you said, there's not naturally the same sequence that could be happening from time to time, but when you see it, you see it.
You do. You absolutely do. And you know, people need to know from, I mean, I wish we would teach them this in school in second grade. People need to know that it is never okay to be called stupid or a bitch or all the other various labels that we can sling. going at each other. That is never okay.
It's never okay to do it, to be called it. It's also never okay to do it.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that's a better part of our education.
Absolutely.
Let's educate people to let them know, because even though that goes on, and it goes on in classrooms, and it goes on in the movies, and it goes on everywhere you see it, it's not an okay thing.
Absolutely not.
Next step.
So the next step after that is, again, one of those steps that's hard to place, really, but it's called insensitivity. And what it is, Armand, is a generalized lack of caring for the well-being of others. And it sounds kind of complicated, but it's so obvious when you see it. It's someone who really doesn't care if the dog is sick or dying. It's someone who doesn't care when on the television, you know, they show you those awful pictures of orphans starving in some country, who just, you know, sort of life's a bitch and then you die attitude. It's someone who can let their plants die and not care. It's someone who, you know, you have a headache and they go, so where's my dinner? Generally just doesn't care about anybody's well-being except their own.
Well, that's kind of, doesn't that go on the sociopathic level again?
Yes, it does. But then, abusers go from a mild level of sociopathy, which is not diagnosable, all the way to complete lack of consciousness and lack of remorse. This is more a generalized insensitivity. So it's not really hitting the sociopathic level yet. Although, between you and me, I wouldn't mind if it was so called, because that's where it's going.
It seems that there's a continuum, and
yes,
you're talking about this continuum. And on this continuum, by me, being a psychologist as well as you are, I would say you're just doing diagnosis, milder, more severe. Because the end result, I'm sure, if I were looking at this very same continuum, is I'm going to wind up with paranoia at the other end of it. You talk about blame, and you talk about the psychopathy, you talk about people who are doing this as part of their normal fix. But I'm saying, hey, these are pretty disturbed folks.
Well,
when they get to the level about not caring if the cat dies and is sick dying right there, mm-hmm. you don't have to look at that and say, well, you see, he's becoming insensitive. Hey, no, he's acting freaky.
Yes, but unfortunately, most of these people are not wandering around in and out of mental institutions or even therapist's office getting diagnosed. Most of these people are wandering around leading otherwise functional lives.
Yes, I understand.
That's the problem.
Well, one of the things you're talking
about... So that's also why I don't want to give the impression, Armand, that domestic violence is restricted to those who are mentally ill. That is absolutely... That's going to lead people down the wrong way.
I understand what your caution is, but I think the audience we have will understand that there is not a group of people called the mentally ill that are different than normal folks.
Many people have that misperception.
Yeah, I know, but not WBAI, not Pacifica
Radio.
Then
you have a wonderfully sophisticated audience.
We have a very sophisticated audience. We're up to number what? What sign are we here?
We're on six, which is insensitivity.
Okay, the insensitivity. We're going to are we going to do it now? No, we're not going to do it yet. We're going to take a short break in a minute, and then we're going to get back and continue this. My guest is Noelle Nelson, Dr. Noelle Nelson, who wrote a book called Dangerous Relationships. If you're concerned about winding up in a violent relationship, in those kind of things, if you want to see the signs of it, if you want to understand, this is kind of an interesting book for you, because if you come from a family of abuse, it's likely you're going to wind up in a family of abuse. But here you could kind of cut, I think you could cut the string of events. You could actually make it not happen. You could actually say, wait a minute, I'm going to be a little more cautious. Let me open my eyes. Now, unfortunately, opening your eyes means giving up a lot of passionate good stuff, because you're not going to let yourself get lost in a relationship. Because according to Dr. Nelson, what you've got to do is keep your eyes open at every time, even when you're making love. Watch to see what's happening. And we're going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes. This is Armand DeMille, Positive Mind. It is just somewhere roughly around 1:30, and WBAI 99.5 FM. Be right back with you.
listening to The Positive Mind with Armand Jamil on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial.
Amy's Lullaby. It comes from it's a European selection. It came to my attention. I decided to play it because of the innocence of the sound. You know, we're all trying to make it work in some way or another. We're all trying to make our love work, our relationships work, and one of the things we're looking for is that safety. One of the advantages of being in a love relationship is to feel safe with someone else. Is to say, you know, we're together. It's like two bears sleeping in a cave, you know? We're protected. If the wolves come in, one or the other of us are going to be here. That sense of safety, that thing, is such an important thing. It's cross-cultural. It goes back over time. It goes to every animal. There's that part of us that wants to feel this safe spot. But one of the things that happened in your attempt to try to stay safe by keeping a relationship is sometimes you ignore the signs that are leading to the ultimate unsafety, the danger of a violent relationship, the potential murder of a relationship. Now, this is Armand DeMille. I'm not likely to sit here and just warn you about everything that's pleasant so that you will avoid, you know, any kind of relationship just out of fear. I don't want you to do that. But we have with us Noelle Nelson, who has seen enough cases of domestic violence that she says, wait a minute, people, keep your eyes open. Because if you're a victim, you're a victim because in some way you colluded with this. In some way you're a part of it. Noelle, we're talking about, how was I doing in my summary so far?
You're doing beautifully, Armand. You totally get it.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go a step further here now. We got step number six. We've talked about, if you haven't heard this, we've talked about the seven signs of a dangerous relationship. Go ahead, let's go with more.
Well, we were talking about insensitivity as sign number six. And the last one, number seven, is past and present violence. And it's odd how many people can miss this one. It is well known in psychology, and you know this, Armand, that past violence is the best predictor of future violence.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't stop and think about it, that when their current new love, you know, mentions that he, you know, roughed up a couple of people here and, you know, kind of got into it with a couple of people there, they don't stop and think what that might mean for them.
Right, I know, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I had a patient who came in one time who talked about her guy as being a guy who was literally beating people up, and then was shocked when he turned it on her.
And my understanding from all the research is, don't be shocked, because whatever they've dished out to other people, they're going to dish out to you and then some.
How about this? How about meeting somebody and falling in love with somebody who talks about how he used to beat his previous wife?
then you really should do everything you can not to fall in love with such an individual.
No, you should question why you're attracted to such an individual, because there's something in you that's attracted to this kind of thing. Because, you know, that's what happens to people when people are find themselves, many people find themselves loving dangerous relationships. Don't you find that?
Well, that's a whole other issue.
Well, let's go to that issue. Because a lot of our people are saying, you know, they will. What I've seen is a lot of people who find the guy on the motorcycle with the chains is the most exciting guy they could go towards.
Sure. And what
why
they
are
love
people
is that is the romance of the danger. They don't stop and think about what that means to them in their in the day-to-day playing out of behavior.
Well, what's the romance of the danger, according to you, as you would see it?
Well, as I would see it, is that everybody needs a certain level of stimulation in their lives just to feel alive and awake. And a lot of people are not very good at generating that within themselves or within their own lives. And then along comes someone that you know, through the media or whatever else, has that sort of excitement about them, whether it's the motorcycle, you know, the leather and the motorcycle or whatever, the bad boy, we used to call him. And they see that, if you will, as a way to get excitement in their own lives because they're not good at getting it by themselves.
And so that's one way. They actually get, and they also get someone who's angry, who can get angry for them. You
absolutely,
know?
Who can get angry for them, who can get passionate for them, who can, if you will, do it for them.
So a passive-aggressive person, a person who tends to be passive-aggressive, would be likely, and very often is likely to fall towards someone, fall in love with or feel attracted to someone who is actively aggressive.
Sure.
And likely to become its biggest victim.
Yes, although, you know, it's interesting, there are abusers who are passive-aggressive because they don't tend to get to the physical abuse as quickly. But they are some of the worst when it comes to the demeaning verbal abuse.
Look, you look at somebody and if you see the seven signs and you've checked them off and you've listened to our program and you said, I got the seven signs, now what are we going to do? Right? How do you work with a partner who's kind of walked on this edge with
you?
Well,
it depends on the partner and it depends on their motivation to stay in the relationship. In other words, if you've been with this person and there's enough good there, first of all, you want to seek professional counseling. Absolutely. And you want to see if you can go in with your partner and talk as is this something we can do together. Now, frequently, when you've hit the physical level, when they're already physically violent, this is not a possible step. Because going into therapy together will mean that they'll just beat you up worse for doing that.
Wait. Why would they do that?
Because a batterer does not want to stand around and admit, usually, to the fact that they're actively battering.
Okay, but if somebody is, well, there is an exception to that. Let's say somebody's a mean drunk. You know what I mean? And they hit and they get lost in it and they become apologetic and they're real sorry about it. At that moment, they would go into therapy.
Yes, at that moment they would.
But,
at that moment they would. But this is outside the scope of my expertise. At that moment, you need to refer to the organizations and counselors that deal specifically with battering relationships. Which is not what I have dealt with. I have been completely dedicated to prevention.
Exaggerated emotional responses. When your partner is having an exaggerated emotional response, what should you do?
Well, first of all, you should take a reality check yourself, okay? You should stop and think about, wait a minute, is this emotional response something that makes sense given what is going on or not? Okay, that's really where you start.
What do you mean? Does this emotional response make sense? How can an exaggerated emotional response bordering on rage ever make sense?
Well, because if somebody just got their, if their child just got run over by a truck and they're having a rageful response, that's not exaggerated.
Okay.
So what you're looking at is this out of proportion? Is this, in other words, I use my common sense. It is what I just, you know, what he's saying I did to him sort of thing. Is what he's saying something that logically would lead to this kind of a reaction? If I'm not sure, I check it out with my family or my friends, people like that.
Mm. Okay.
And the other thing, of course, is to realize that just because your lover is acting strongly to something doesn't mean that you are the one responsible.
Observe, observe, observe.
Oh, truly so. You know, Armand, it became frightening to me as I did the research on this book to realize that we choose our golf clubs and our washing machines with more care than we choose our lovers.
Well.
And talk about cars. We choose our cars with far more care than we choose our beloved.
And there's more violence with cars. But listen, you know, let me ask you something. What got you started on this, Noel? You must have had some kind of interaction with it yourself.
Yes,
I did. You know, most of us, every time we interview somebody on the air, we find them that are brave enough to say, yeah, I was in the middle of it. Because everything I've ever become a specialist in has been something that I've gone through myself. You must have been wound up in the middle of this one
day. Yes, I did.
What happened?
It went all the way up to the first incident of actual physical abuse, and right before the second, I realized what was going on and bolted.
Wow.
So but it got all the way up there. It was appalling. It was.
You were married?
I was married. My partner was a pillar of the community, was adored by my family. To everyone else's eyes was Mr. Perfect. And talk about a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Well, you always got to watch out for those pillars of the community, you know what I mean?
Well, you do and you don't. There are some who are genuine pillars.
There are
others who are controlling and perfectionistic.
I think that's a big key. I know that's a big clue. That's very interesting. The perfectionistic ones always seem to have two sides of their personality.
Well, it's very hard to keep all that perfectionism going, and you also have to wonder why they need things to be so perfect.
Right. Okay, so here you are with a guy who's a pillar of the community, and little by how long did your relationship last?
Unfortunately, a long time.
Like 12 years?
Years.
So years and years and years, and then you're seeing...
Of my being humiliated and embarrassed and ashamed... that I, the psychologist, you know, could possibly have made this big an error in judgment, could possibly not get it to work, could not, quote, fix it. And I learned the hard way, you don't fix these things unless the partner is willing, and the partner was not willing. The partner was not willing to admit his abuse in any way, shape, or form. It was all my fault, whatever it was.
It was all your fault, but you actually got hit.
Oh, yeah.
And you get,
actually, he never literally hit me. What he did was he walked me into a wall. He could always say he never hit a woman.
I like that. Walk somebody in, a pillar walks somebody into the wall.
Yes.
And therefore escapes the blame.
Not paying any attention to the fact that I'm falling all over the furniture as I'm being walked into the wall.
You know, or being pushed.
Yeah.
You know?
Never laid a hand on me in that way. Just walked me right into that.
But you knew it, and you had it. You
said,
well,
that's violence when you're falling down and you're getting huge bruises, and the next day you're asked, what's that?
Yeah. So what made you break away? I mean, what?
I couldn't. Well, first of all, once I first got walked into the wall, I knew that I could not. That was it. I mean, I'm not. I like myself far too much to let myself get into it any further than that. And then it was just after that, just a matter of I started calling the battering organizations. I got information. I bided my time in the sense that I became perfect in order to keep everything very smooth and very quiet for about 3 weeks until I knew he was leaving on a business trip, and then I got out of there literally within 24 hours.
Is that you recommend that to people
no.
if they're in
you
the
know
violent
what I recommend?
Situation?
I recommend that people, on the contrary, the minute they feel any of this going on, contact a battering organization and then take the steps that are outlined even at the back of this book, because as far as I'm concerned, any book that deals with domestic violence must deal with how to get out. And there are much better ways of doing it than I did it.
But you did it.
I did it the best I could at the time.
And then went out and did the research.
And I went out and I rented a place, a tiny little place, within two blocks of a police station. I was scared to death.
What did that feel like? I mean,
terrible.
What?
Horrible.
Horrible and fear,
I'm not a very large person anyway, but I dropped so much weight you could see my ribs. I couldn't sleep. My eyes were it was awful. And for me, it was also humiliating, and that was, you know, the hardest part.
The humiliating part, because we're supposed to know better.
We're supposed to know better.
Right? We're the ones who are on top of this, and we're supposed to know better. So.
And also, because he was such a pillar, it was having to convince everybody that I wasn't crazy, and this was happening, and here's to show for it.
Boy, but how's he reacting to your having the book out?
I have no idea.
Because everybody, you don't talk to him anymore.
Oh, not a very long time.
Yeah.
I don't wish to have any communication whatsoever. And since we had no children together, there's no need.
Well, that's a really tough part, huh, when there are kids involved?
That is a very tough part.
Because now there are children involved, and they get torn. They become part of an additional part of the violence.
Yep. So, that's why, as far as I'm concerned, Armand, prevention is, I mean, you can't prevent absolutely everything, but prevention is such a large part of this. In other words, you really can see it before things like kids come along, that you really want to try for that, because, as you said, once kids get involved, oh, it's a whole new ballgame.
Well, you know, one option is to leave. Another option is to catch it when you're on the warning signs and do something about it. And the warning signs could be step one, you know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
It could be all the way
back. And you can do something right from there.
Right. And the kind of thing you could do is talk about, what, boundaries and talk about...
Absolutely. Talk about boundaries, talk about what does and doesn't work for you, and then you can learn very fast if this is a partner who is willing to, oh, gosh, I'm sorry, hon, and accept the boundaries, or if this is a partner who says, well, oh, too bad.
So if you had the knowledge, if you had a Dr. Noel Nelson, right, who was going to be your therapist at the time, if you had that for a therapist when you were married, then what you would have learned early on is you would have gone to Mr. Pillar and you would have said, look, I want to talk to you.
Right.
And what would you have done? What would you have done early on?
I think in that particular case it wouldn't have worked. Because he was in such a state of denial about anything he was doing.
So you think some relationships just, no matter, they're just not going to work?
No, because the person, if a person is not willing to assume responsibility for any of their behavior, then there's nothing to be worked on.
Isn't it possible that you could, not you and Mr. Pillar, because I know you got depillerated, But let's say that a person has a mate, and they go to their mate and they say, look, I got to tell you something. When you scream at me, I know this is a sign that scares me. So if you ever get to the point where you're screaming at me and calling me names, I'm going to get quiet. I'm going to get quiet and I'm not going to respond. And I'm going to be looking to take some distance between us. But I want you to know that because I'm really scared about that level. I think that's going to escalate. So in a calm moment, if you say that to someone and you make an agreement, if you ever touch me, if you ever hit me, if you ever push me, if you ever walk me into a wall, I'm getting out of here as fast as I can. Mm-hmm. There will be no discussion. Is that agreed between the two of us? If I do that to you, you run too. Can you get an agreement? And do you think that agreement would hold in the middle of that kind of passion?
It's you see, the problem you run into is with the kind of person who says, I don't scream. Or, I never scream unless you make me. So as long as you don't make me, I won't scream. It's up to you.
You know, there's an old movie. Richard Burton was on a play on Broadway. And I don't think it was Virginia Woolf, but I think it was one of the other ones, where Liz Taylor and Richard Burton had this thing that they did because they were so explosive with each other. And anybody would have considered them to have a mutually violent relationship. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because they were as screaming, near-throwing as you could possibly get. Mm-hmm. But they had a thing they did. They invented this thing, which I've used with clients, where at any point, if a person says, whatever you're doing, I dislike so much that I'm going to say one word and we both have a deal. And the deal is if I say this one word, and usually they pick the name of a pet or the name of something that, you know, something silly like Jell-O. As soon as I say that word, we will both be quiet for 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That's great if it works, but I have yet, I mean, it'll work if the abusive one, and in this case both of them did the yelling and screaming, but it'll only work if the other person isn't in denial.
Well, you see, the point of that one is, if let's say you're in denial and you're screaming at me and I say the word Jell-O, we've agreed we're both going to be quiet. That 2 minute quietness usually can quell that level of passion.
I absolutely would try it. I think it's totally worth trying.
Because I think there's got to be something other than just getting out.
Of course,
for your own protection.
Of other than getting out. And there are many, many relationships which can be transformed, and I've watched it happen. All I'm trying to point out is that there has to be willingness from both parties.
You know, there's a problem with seeking professional help too, Noel, because, you know, in the case of batteries, I've seen enough psychologists who have turned down cases because they're afraid of malpractice whenever there's any kind of violence involved. So the first thing they do is they say, you've got to leave the house or something like that. You know, the therapists have to protect themselves, not because they're trying to protect the patient, but because they want to protect themselves against malpractice. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard for a person to go find decent help if the therapist's first thought is to protect themselves against being sued.
I know that here in Southern California, we have several places which deal specifically with these sorts of relationships and with batterers, and that's to whom I refer when the need arises. In other words, there are therapists who specialize in these areas, and they would be the ones that you would want to try to contact.
That's
but again, as I said, you know, I deal primarily with prevention, and that's my bailiwick.
That's your bailiwick.
Absolutely.
We were talking to Noelle Nelson, who's been who's a psychologist who has written a book called Dangerous Relationships, giving you the seven signs of a violent relationship and what you can kind of notice could possibly be something where you wind up really being harmed, and trying to tell you that be cautious and be careful and keep your eyes open. You know, it kind of says one thing to me, though. This is what a gitnip is? No, you don't know because I invented the word. A gitnip is something that's good in theory, not in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why good in theory, not in practice? You have to be a pretty thinking person to be able to say, I will observe. Most people don't observe ever. They're just wrapped in their emotions, or many people, and the people I know who are most involved in situations of domestic violence are not thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
They're feelers. They move spontaneously. They don't observe.
Mm-hmm.
So we're asking somebody who's a monkey not to be a giraffe.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, now stop and think. But it's a good theory. It's like I remember they sell desk
work. You know what I found, Armand?
Go ahead, tell me.
Is that when people are in enough pain, they're willing to help make the theory work.
So really, this is a book for the people who are in the pain, because the
people... Well, when you're in pain, you're much more willing to start paying attention.
Yeah, okay.
And so that's the bottom line, is yes, I agree with you that more people may be feelers in these relationships, but they start being willing to think when they realize just how much pain this can create.
Yeah. Boy, I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
You know, do you ever give up the anger? Do you ever get over it? Of being violated like that?
I think so. I think that depends on the person. I mean, I have given up the anger on as it relates to myself, and I've done my forgiveness work.
Well, that's real important. You've got to forgive yourself for allowing yourself
to... Oh, yeah.
But
I do not get over the anger I have, generally speaking, at the outrageousness of any kind of abuse. And I don't think I ever want to give up that anger.
No, but I mean, even with your ex, you know, is there any point that you will say, I forgive him?
Oh, I have.
You just don't ever
talk. He's not sitting around doing it on purpose. He's doing it out of his own inability to cope with what's going on inside him.
But that's not pathology. That's just...
That's just...
Normal, funny guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think that... But with all of us, Armand, there's a degree of narcissism that's running through there. There's probably a degree of sociopathy. But it's not anything that's worth a diagnosis.
Well, what happens, you know, this is something a lot of people fall into. Let's say they do separate with someone, and then that someone says, let's get back together again. You know, I mean, how do you, let's say you want to heal it. Let's say you want it to be over. Let's say that you even have a child you're sharing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got to be so careful because... Because, you know, getting together could be just another trap.
Could.
Mm-hmm. Do you,
so you do want to be careful. You want to proceed with caution and keep your eyes open and, you know, pay attention. Use your common sense. Does this look like it's going to hurt, or does this look like it's a good thing? Is he respecting boundaries I'm now setting, or is he kind of pushing against them?
Now, that's a good point. And there's a point right there, because if it's in any one of your relationships, is that person respecting the boundaries that I'm setting? Now, these are very fine words, and Noelle, and I want to thank you for that, because if you think about it, friends, any relationship you have, you ask yourself, is that person respecting the boundaries I'm setting? If I say, no, I would not like to do this, do they start trying to wheedle me or convince me? Do they see that, my own boundary setting, as a reflection of my trying to be who I am and to be with them without resenting it? Or do they see it as this is something to be overcome? And I think that's a very important sign. So I think even with batteries, with your ex-batterer, with your ex-husband, with your ex, or with your current relationships, there's a very important piece of work is to try to get people to respect the mutual boundaries, for a person to say, no, I don't like that, and for that to be respected.
Yes. Because I would say that is so key in any good relationship of any type.
Any relationship of any type, anyway. Right? Because if you're not doing that, you're trying to convince the person that they're wrong for being the way they are, then you've set the path for this potential disastrous relationship. Dr. Noelle Nelson, author of Dangerous Relationships, I want to thank you very much for being with us and giving us your wisdom and
my
your
pleasure,
experience.
Anna.
Nice to talk to you. We'll be back with you another time, I think. All right? Maybe we'll go
perfect.
A little further with this. Bye-bye
thank
for
you
now.
So much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Interesting, don't you think? Interesting because, you know, I could hear all the anger still in there. But I could understand it. I hope you do, too. We're going to have to be going right now, my friends. If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to WBAI.org or you can go to thepositivemind.com where you'll hear a lot of archives. And you could send an email also to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear your reactions. Be back with you soon, my friends. Thank you.